Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Friday, January the 14th, 2022. And it is the beginning of the day for me at about 8:15. And my guest today is Max, who is in Germany, who reached out to me, interestingly, after I posted a couple of tweets linking to discussions by relatively younger people, meaning in their 20s, who had made the decision to renounce U.S. citizenship. And this is of interest to me because over the years, my general view has been that people in that age group probably can hold off on renouncing a little bit, although clearly there are reasons to do so. And, you know, I subsequently got a message from Max who said, I'm in that category and I'd be happy to talk with you about this. And here he is today being part of the podcast. So Max, first of all, thanks very much for reaching out and your willingness to discuss this and help people understand it. And you're what, midday, I guess, in Germany? What would be 2:20 in the afternoon your time now?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. So we were, of course, talking before hitting the record button, and you went through a bit of your history. And on the one hand, I would say that maybe technically you're an accidental American in a very technical sense, but the reality is not so much. So could you begin by just giving a little bit of your history? How did you get the American citizenship? Where did you grow up? All this kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So I was born in Germany already as a dual citizen. I got the American citizenship through my dad. We moved to the U.S. Shortly after that. I was a few years old because my dad found some work over there. And I actually ended up living there for quite a while, almost 20 years, before somewhat recently moving back to Germany. So you can say that I did actually grow up in the U.S.
Well, it sure sounds like it, okay? It sounds like your memories of all of your growing up years are pretty much rooted in the U.S. That's where you went to school and where your immediate family was, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned that although growing up in the U.S., you retained strong family ties in Germany.
That's true. Even though I did grow up in the U.S., you know, did my schooling there, college and so on, whenever I had, you know, summer vacation, which in the U.S. is, you know, a good 3 months long, roughly, I did spend pretty much that entire time with family in Germany. So even though I, you know, didn't grow up in the U.S., I also still had that time in Germany where, you know, over the years, it does add up to pretty significant amount of time. So even if the majority of that time was spent in the U.S., I could almost say, like, you know, in a way I did still grow up in both countries. At least that's how I still got to know Germany really well, got to keep the German language, things like that. So then it wasn't, you know, that difficult of a decision for me to say, I want to move back to Germany.
So although you grew up in the United States, you had a clear awareness, okay, of the existence of a life outside the United States and some experience with
absolutely
it. Yes. The summers there. Okay. Very, very interesting. Would you mind just sharing a little bit of where you lived in the United States and your educational background and all that kind of stuff?
So I primarily lived in Texas. I have a bachelor's and master's degree in computer science. And after getting those degrees, worked as a software developer and still do now here in Germany as well.
Well, that is very, very impressive brain power, Max, okay?
thank you.
I certainly congratulate you on that. I would think very employable and portable in the world that we live in. Okay, so you're growing up in the U.S. and So you, every morning, you pledge allegiance to the flag and in school and all that stuff, right?
Yes, I remember doing that pretty vividly, especially because in Texas, you also got to say a Texas pledge as well. So that was right after the Pledge of Allegiance.
My God, could that be construed to be divided loyalties?
Well, depends on who you ask in Texas, you know.
Yeah, there, you know, I bet you get some separatist question like that. That's true. Interesting. Anyway, so you're growing up with, you know, a strong sense of American values. I would have to think a strong sense of American history. You know, and Texas history, et cetera. You, as I understand it, your college, your university degrees were also in Texas. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, why would a guy like you, with that kind of educational background, and I would have to think enormous employment opportunities available to you in the United States, why did you decide you wanted to move to away from the United States to Germany? What was the dynamic there?
So for me, primarily, it was out of family reasons. Whenever I moved to the US when I was little, it was just with my parents. Since then, they've also moved back to Europe, and I wanted to stay somewhat close to them as well as, you know, other extended family. So pretty much now, living here in Europe, my entire family is here in Europe. I also do kind of appreciate that Germany does have a somewhat better, you know, security net in terms of, you know, if you were to get unemployed or, you know, just having more vacation time compared to the average American job. You know, just things like that, that make quality of life, in my opinion, a bit better. Even if maybe wages aren't as high as in the US, I'm still, you know, earning more than enough to live comfortably.
Okay, now, Max, I apologize for having to ask you this next question in advance. Okay, but given the narratives that come out of American media on these kinds of topics, Max, did you move from the United States to avoid U.S. taxation?
No.
You're sure about it?
I am positive. You know, I don't earn, you know, that much. You know, I'm nowhere near six digits when it comes to salary. So it's not like I have enormous amounts of wealth that, you know, I'm trying to hide from taxation. And I mean, Germany is also not known for having low tax rates, right? So if taxation was important to me,
pay high taxes in Germany,
more than in the U.S. That's true.
More than in the U.S. Okay. So you certainly didn't leave the United States to avoid U.S. taxation. Okay, that's interesting. Now, as a dual citizen, before we get into your renunciation, it sounds to me as though you're one of these dual citizens from birth who would have been exempt from the exit tax even if you had money, because you're born a German U.S. dual citizen. You're a tax resident of Germany. Actually, you would not have met the exception because I think you haven't been out of the United States for 10 years or whatever. But down the road, you would have met the dual citizenship exemption of the exit tax.
Eventually, yes.
Yeah, down the road for sure. But you still renounced U.S. citizenship. And why didn't you just keep the dual citizenship? You know, thank you very much. I'm an American. I'll always be an American. I may not want to live there, but I want to keep my U.S. citizenship. Why do you just make the specific decision to renounce U.S. citizenship?
So first off, because the primary reason for wanting to move back to Europe was because of family, I knew that it would be very unlikely that I would want to move back to the US. At least I definitely don't right now. And I have a hard time seeing myself want to move back to the US anytime soon, if ever, honestly. The main thing that kind of got me to decide that, you know, I want to renounce is not because of, you know, the tax or possibility for taxation or having to file tax returns or anything social, political. Those weren't the reasons why I, you know, decided, no, this is what I want to do. The main reason was that I found myself locked out of all sorts of financial opportunities, I would say. So I think it's safe to say that right now, you know, parking money, however much it may be, in a savings account is a pretty bad idea because, you know, no one's paying interest. You're pretty much losing money just because of inflation. So ideally, you know, if I want to save for a house or for retirement or things like that, the better option is to, you know, invest. However, you know, by being a US citizen, and it didn't matter at all that I was also a German citizen, the only thing that mattered was, hey, you're an American, meant that no one would open an account for me. So I was completely locked out, couldn't do anything. And I just, for, you know, the long term, that seemed like a pretty bad strategy. And, you know, a common piece of financial advice is always, when it comes to investing, hey, the earlier you start, the better, just because the interest compounds and, you know, you end up with a lot more money at the end, the earlier you start. And so even as a young person, I felt like I didn't have too much time to waste.
Mm-hmm. So if I can paraphrase that, basically for you, the cost of, to remaining an American citizen was that you simply would not be able to responsibly invest and plan for your retirement.
That's true. I actually had a joke with myself a little bit that, you know, the fee to renounce, which is, you know, quite high, was in investment into my future. That was the only way I could really justify paying that much.
It's not a joke. I mean, to be very, very clear here, all right, and anybody who would dispute this doesn't understand what's going on. That $2,300 fee to renounce U.S. citizenship for many people is not only the best investment they can ever make in their lives because it opens the door to real investing, but it's the only investment I know of, and this is painful to say, but true, that generates a return every second of every minute of every hour of every day of every week of every month of every year for the rest of your life. It's unbelievable. I mean, there is no financial return that is better. And even if they tripled the fee, it would be true. Why does the United States do this to its citizens abroad? I mean, what's your theory on this? This has been going on now for years.
I think it has a lot to do with narrative, just because the common perception is that people who live abroad are either just abroad temporarily, and so, you know, they're going to come back anyway, so it's not too bad if, you know, they have to fill out tax returns for a few years and things like that. Or on the flip side, maybe you're not abroad temporarily and, you know, then you're a wealthy individual that's, you know, just trying to avoid paying taxes. And of course, you want to try and avoid losing out on all that tax revenue. That's one thing. I also think that the US kind of has a hard time accepting in a way or truly understanding that, you know, people can live abroad. You know, the common perception is that, you know, once you've arrived in the US and you live there, you've kind of made it. At least there's no better country to live in. And so why would Americans choose to go anywhere else? And, you know, I mean, that's obviously not necessarily true because there are plenty of people who do live in other countries and appreciate, you know, things that they get in those countries. It's a narrative, it's a mindset thing. It's all of that.
Well, you know, it's one thing, it's bad enough for the U.S. to impose worldwide taxation on U.S. citizens who live outside the United States, but you would agree that in effect, it's actually imposing a separate and more punitive tax system on people who live outside the United States, right? Because of the way they tax, for example, non-U.S. investments, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, it's actually far worse than it seems. Do you think the U.S. should abolish citizenship taxation?
I do. I think there are much better ways of, you know, trying to catch tax cheats, because I think that's the main goal behind citizenship-based taxation. You know, someone gets rich and then decides to leave the country to avoid paying taxes, right? That's
how do you think other countries manage this problem? I mean, I live in Canada that has, you know, in my view, a brutally repressive tax system. But you can move from Canada and retain your citizenship, you know, not be forced into the kind of situation that, I mean, well, hold on a minute. Maybe I should choose my words carefully. Did you feel basically forced to renounce your citizenship?
I think had I, you know, been able to open investment accounts and the like, I probably would not have renounced. I think even if I would have maybe had to pay a few more taxes on it, you know, just because the U.S. still decided that's what they want, you know, as long as I'm not losing a total of like 70% just to taxes, you know, then I could have maybe even still dealt with that. But, you know, I guess put another way, I didn't necessarily have that big of a problem with the possibility of having to pay taxes. It's just that I couldn't even do things that would then put me in a position where I owe taxes. Like I couldn't even get that far.
You know, that is really, really interesting. I mean, obviously I agree with you, but what's interesting is to hear this from somebody in his 20s. You know, you usually don't hear, usually the narrative from somebody in your age group, you know, is somewhat different. So you're aware that Eritrea is reputed to be the only other country in the world that has citizenship taxation. You're aware of that?
Yes.
Now, let me ask you this question. All right, accepting that the way the Eritrean version of citizenship taxation works, which is some kind of an excise tax, a percentage on income, right? Without all these forms and restrictions. If the US had a system of citizenship taxation that was like Eritrea's system, right? In other words, it was just a, you know, a percentage of your income without all these restrictions, would you have been less motivated to renounce US citizenship?
I think so, yeah. At least the way you just described it, where it's just, you know, simple, we want this little cut, I think 2%, right? Roughly,
you know, I don't even know, but let's say it's 2%. Let's say it's 10%. Let's say it's any percent. You know, I mean, that it doesn't, well, not 100%, but you know what I mean? I mean, let's say that it's a simple administrative percent, okay, that, you know, doesn't mean you're subject to this comprehensive regulatory regime that prohibits you from doing anything.
Yeah, I think that
would have been less likely to renounce.
The decision of whether or not to renounce would have been a lot more difficult. That's true, because at least I would have still had the possibility to, you know, do things like invest so that I can save up for financial goals.
So you would agree then that the what the United States is doing, that its version of citizenship taxation is far more abusive than what Eritrea does?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, let me ask you another question here. Do you know what a poll tax is? A poll tax is generally where everybody has to pay a tax because they're a living, breathing human being. Oh my God, I see you there. You owe a tax.
Hadn't heard of that before, but okay.
Well, actually, isn't citizenship taxation a form of poll tax?
Suppose in a way you could say that, that's true. I'm sure other people then would say, well, you know, there's some exceptions that the US has, like the foreign earned income exception, whatnot, that kind of negates that. But I mean, okay. I don't know. All of that, it's not perfect. Okay. It's not perfect.
You know, because I mean, you're a very, you've thought about this. You're a bright guy, for sure. What if the U.S. had a poll tax? Every U.S. citizen abroad has to pay the U.S. $1,000 a year because you're a U.S. citizen. Will you have renounced?
I think it still wouldn't have been as likely as how it currently is. But it would still be on the table, so to speak.
The renunciation would still be on the table, but it wouldn't have been as easy a decision to renounce. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yes.
Okay, interesting. Okay. So this is 2022, and you've renounced fairly recently. There's been a lot of discussion recently, obviously, since you're following this on Twitter, so you know this, that it's been very, very difficult for people to renounce. Max, how did you figure that out?
I already made the decision to renounce in the summer of 2020, which was a few months into the pandemic. I reached out to the only consulate in Germany that even does renunciations, the one in Frankfurt, because other consulates like Berlin or Munich, they don't offer the service. And that was right around the time whenever the consulate in Frankfurt decided to, I think, close down completely. And then whenever they did open up again, they only offered certain services, and renunciations were on the very bottom of their list.
They didn't make an exception for you.
No. I think I initially got some sort of reply because that was right before they decided to shut everything down. They told me to send in, you know, documents and the forms that they want you to fill out ahead of time so that it's all ready to go whenever you do actually have your scheduled appointment. And after I sent all that in, I didn't hear anything else. Whenever I try to check up on the status of just, did you, like, I know you're closed, but did you at least receive my documents? Am I on some sort of waiting list? I just got auto responses and that was it.
So you didn't, I take it you then did not renounce in Germany?
I did not. I had to go to Armenia in order to renounce because
so you are Armenia was doing a renunciation tourist.
I guess in a way, but I do know that I am definitely not the only one to have traveled a little bit, let's say, to be able to renounce.
Well, you know, it's pretty, of course it's sad, but, you know, it seems to me that it's an awfully strong statement that, you know, people are willing to go to such lengths to get rid of U.S. citizenship, isn't it?
I think so. And at least in my case, I sort of felt, I'm not sure how to describe it, like a bit of pressure or maybe a feeling of kind of being trapped where, you know, obviously the U.S. doesn't really like it that compared to previous decades, a relatively high number of people are renouncing. And they can probably guess why people are, you know, renouncing more than in those previous decades. So if they have an excuse to, you know, put the brakes on that, then they'll use it. And, you know, the future is uncertain. No matter how much you plan ahead or think you know what might happen, who knows if, you know, the pandemic will still be used for many more years to, you know, prevent people from renouncing, or whether in the meantime, you know, the fee goes up again by thousands of dollars. I mean, again, the fee as it is right now is already quite expensive. So,
well, what do you think about that? I mean, on the one hand, I do agree with you on this. I think the 23, you know, if you view it as an investment, you know, it becomes a total no-brainer. But it is interesting that it is so high and so out of line with, you know, these types of fees around the world. I mean, what is your general, I mean, I guess, you know, nobody would like the renunciation fee, but I mean, do you see it as, you know, either a punishment or designed to keep people in U.S. citizenship, or how do you view it?
I think so. And I could maybe even go so far as to say that it's somewhat of a poor tax. Because
what kind of tax?
Like a tax for poor people. and I say that because, you know, if they care about, you know, the tax cheats, the people that have lots of money, if those are the people that they think are renouncing, a fee of $2,350 is not going to stop them, but it will stop people that are, you know, only earning, you know, $30,000 or euros a year, right? Because then they can just cover their living costs and not really save up for a significant administrative fee.
I mean, yeah, just think of it. I mean, I've seen that phrase, save up. I mean, people all around the world are saving up to be able to renounce U.S. citizenship. That is really, you know, really sad. I mean, it is regressive. And the fact that, you know, I think the fee to become a U.S. citizen is somewhere in the range of $800. You know, and that actually requires work and background checks. You know, I mean, it really, really is. I mean, how could you describe as anything but a form of just pure nastiness and vindictiveness? And there's just no other way to look at it, you know, I think. You know, and then we get to the whole thing about how, you know, why are they saying they can't do these in the age of COVID? Well, they're saying this because these things have to be done inside the U.S. consulate or embassy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sorry, but that is not what the law says. you know, plainly and simply. So, I mean, you know, they may be interpreting it that way, but that's not what the law says. I mean, do you think that it would be a reasonable thing for them to do these renunciations through video conference?
I think so, especially in, you know, the current circumstances of the pandemic and so forth. You know, it's not fair for especially other people who, you know, unlike me, maybe they are only Americans and they're trying to gain the citizenship of their new country that they've been living in for the past however many years. Take, for example, Germany, right? Say someone's trying to get German citizenship. Well, they can only get that after they've been able to renounce their U.S. citizenship. And so those people can't even move on and you know, do the things that they want to do with their lives because the U.S. is, you know, putting the brakes on all that.
Yeah, now that, you know, I'm aware of that situation in Germany, that Germany requires, you know, to put this contextually, would require renunciation of U.S. citizenship to become a German citizen. I thought there were certain grounds, certain times that could be waived. Am I wrong on that, or?
There are exceptions. I think, though, that at least from what I've heard, that right now, just because the U.S. isn't really letting you renounce, that generally isn't allowed as an exception. I think sometimes it depends on the person who's working on your case. But the primary exception that is allowed is if the fee to renounce is higher than your monthly salary. That one usually goes through.
Wow. So this is going on, you know, so few people are aware of this unless they're affected by it directly. You know, the U.S. call, you know, so you grew up in Texas, and did you ever hear the phrase, the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Of course, very often.
Very often. Would you agree that, as it stands, one just does not leave the land of the free for free?
It's definitely more difficult than I think it needs to be. There's just whenever I've been, scrolling around on Twitter and sometimes specifically trying to see what people tweet about this topic. I'll find tweets where, people find out for the first time that, oh, the US still taxes you after you leave. And, if you want that to stop, you have to renounce. And there's an exit tax that might apply to you. And, people then immediately say, well, like, okay, I guess I'm stuck here because apparently there's no easy way out. And it's quite interesting how that compares to other countries, like in Germany, for example, where it is relatively easy. I mean, of course, you have the EU where going to another EU country is even easier. But say you want to go to Australia or New Zealand or whatever, the thing that makes it difficult is whatever Australia or New Zealand wants in order to give you an immigration visa. But Germany doesn't really care. If you want to go, then you can go. As long as you paid your taxes while you're still here, then.
And I believe Germany actually does have exit taxes. I'm not completely up on exactly what they are, but Germany does have exit taxes, which is, obviously a way to, make sure that the wealthy can't leave without paying taxes. And of course, the United States could do this too, but they do not, it seems to me, I think they clearly don't understand the issue, but the bigger problem is, as I've said before, it's not even that they don't care, it's that they don't care that they don't care. Would you agree?
Yep, that's how I see it too. Yep, something could absolutely be done, but for probably too many reasons to count, kind of dragging their feet.
Yeah. Max, this has been a really good conversation, and I thank you and I'm grateful to you for having reached out because you're providing sort of a summary of how this looks, through your eyes, right? As one of the, somebody in his 20s who renounces U.S. citizenship, and I think that you're giving up more than somebody say in their 50s, because you're, although with your background, I'm sure you could find employment anywhere. Still, because of your age, I think you're giving up more than somebody else might. So thank you very much for reaching out in the conversation. This has been great. Is there anything you'd like to add before we sort of sign off for today?
I think all I could just say is that, renunciation is a difficult decision. And, now just because people have maybe heard my story about, I'm in my 20s and I made the decision to renounce doesn't necessarily mean that that is the best decision for everyone. I would have maybe also liked to have waited a bit longer to see whether something does change about citizenship-based taxation or not. But I guess maybe wasn't that optimistic. And so I kind of took things into my own hands and made the decision that I thought was best for me. But of course,
Well,
if
on that note of the issue of change, I mean, how do you perceive the various advocacy initiatives that are going on here or there? Effective, ineffective, focused, unfocused? I mean, what do you think the change needs to actually be here for it to make a difference?
that I think is one of the great mysteries, because I think what the different advocacy groups are doing is very important, and I'm glad that there is a voice that's trying to improve the situation for Americans. Whether I don't know, it doesn't have to be the most perfect solution, but anything that does make things a little bit better is progress, right? I think it's just very difficult to convince politicians or pretty much anyone who lives in the US that they should care about the problems that Americans abroad face. And I'm honestly, personally, not even sure how to, get that across that they should at least care enough to make changes.
Well, if we listen to the discussion today, Max, and your thoughts, I mean, I think in a small way, I mean, you're certainly a rational, lucid voice for, you know, the reasons for your renunciation. And I think that they should listen. All right. Perhaps we can pick this up at some stage down the road. But again, I do thank you very much for this. And I will put this podcast up fairly quickly, and you will be heard sort of worldwide.
Awesome. Thanks again for having me.